You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, July 13th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, from HuffPo and straight off of his questioning President Obama at the press conference on Monday. I guess he's not straight off it. He's probably done something since then. Sam Stein of the Huffington Post will be joining us shortly, and who knows what other surprises we will have for you today. The cavalcade that is the Majority Report. Quick update. I've never, ever really talked about this story, but anytime that, well, I can't say anytime because that would happen constantly, but anytime that Andrew Breitbart, the serial fraud who runs a bunch of websites called Big, obsessed with Hollywood, I had an opportunity to discuss with him his career at Netroots Nation at a bar, because the right wing falls around Netroots Nation, or attempts to glom onto its press coverage. And I guess Breitbart has been talking about, literally for 2 years, nonstop, the racist attack by union thugs on a Tea Party protester. Apparently there was some scuffle in St. Louis, and he's been talking about how this is the machinations of this. It involved Acorn, I think, and Bill Ayers, and of course the White House, and the interterrestrials from Mount Shasta, left-leaning interterrestrials from Mount Shasta, to be fair. He wrote a piece, "I am Kenneth Gladney, to show his support with this man who was apparently pushed in a scuffle at a protest." And it took all of 50 minutes for a jury in St. Louis County to return a not guilty verdict on a misdemeanor charge. And so wow. That was what I mean, you cannot believe. I mean, it should be just a crime on the amount of ink, digital ink, that was spent on this. But of course, in classic Breitbart fashion, now he is now blaming Media Matters, probably in conjunction with Acorn and Bill Ayers and interterrestrials, left-leaning interterrestrials from Mount Shasta, and of course the Obama administration, and probably a series of other people, for somehow mind-melding the jurors coming out with a not guilty verdict. But it's always fun to see Andrew Breitbart cry about somehow, you know, over his own frauds falling apart. And I want to call attention before we go to Sam Stein to a story. You'll recall a couple of months ago I was on Radigan's show, Dylan Radigan's show, as it is my custom many times on Mondays. David Stockman was on. People were making such a huge deal about PIMCO, a huge investment firm, shorting Treasury bonds. It was the sign of the apocalypse. once QE2 stops, and now we have this sign that PIMCO has shorted for the first time Treasury bills, that the economy was going to spiral out of control, that inflation was going to run rampant. This is why you can't have borrowing. This is why people are we're not going to have investors buy U.S. debt because of the fear of a default. And it turns out that Bill Gross, the manager of PIMCO, the largest bond fund, is now scaling back those bets against the value of U.S. government debt trying to salvage this bad bet they made against U.S. Treasury bills. In other words, folks, the idea that our debt and deficit, the idea that our government spending is going to make it impossible for the U.S. government to borrow money from investors because there's just not going to be enough investors to do it. They're just going to require such huge, huge premiums because it would be such a dangerous bet to loan the United States. Turns out to be, well...
Hey, what happened?
Nothing. Nothing. In fact, back in February, I think when they made this bet, or at least the high, it was 3.73% was the yield on a 10-year Treasury bill. Not particularly high in terms of historical standards. In fact, an indication that people think this is the safest place to put your money. We're willing to take less interest on this loan because it's so safe and secure. Now, the 10-year Treasury has fallen to 2.91% as of yesterday. It's simply another way of me saying the same thing that I have been saying for months and months. And it puts into stark relief this ridiculousness of this deficit and debt fears. And coming up, we're going to be talking to Sam Stein, who's going to tell us about Mitch McConnell's total capitulation to the idea that cutting spending is a far more important principle than raising the debt ceiling. We'll be right back. We are back. It is the Majority Report. My name is Sam Cedar on the phone. Pleasure to welcome back to the program Sam Stein. He is. Are you the chief Washington correspondent for the Huffington Post? What is your title?
Yeah, so why not? The actual title is political editor and White House correspondent.
I've just upped you to chief political editor and chief White House correspondent.
I'll take it.
Good job the other day at the press conference. My understanding is that the first time the word jobs were uttered was in the course of your question.
Yeah, I guess so. And, you know, it's kind of sad, but someone had to ask, I guess, about jobs.
Yes. It is actually extremely sad. So wait a second. Now, catch me up on this. We were barreling down. President Obama had put on the table cuts to Social Security. You had reported, I think you were the first to report, that he had also, in these debt negotiations, the debt ceiling negotiations, had offered to cut Medicare in the form of raising the eligibility age. That was on the table. Republicans
yeah.
didn't want to have any revenue. And now Mitch McConnell comes out yesterday with a proposal. I want you to characterize it. I mean, explain it to us and then characterize it, because as far as I can tell, this is him saying, I got too many calls from Wall Street.
Yeah, and we have a piece coming out today about how subtly behind the scenes Wall Street's been very clear about how cataclysmic they think this would be, and the pressure's been applied to not just Mitch McConnell, but all members of Congress. But basically, you know, it's shocking in some respects, because Republicans had an amazing deal on their hands for $3 trillion in cuts, including raising the eligibility age of Medicare from 65 to 67, including tinkering with Social Security, even though everyone knows it doesn't contribute to the deficit or the debt, including steep cuts to discretionary spending and mandatory spending, all of that. They would have to sign off on somewhere between $800 billion in tax revenues and $1 trillion in tax revenues. Those are actually dwarfed by what would happen if you simply let the Bush tax cuts expire, or if you took the proposals in the President's Deficit Commission. We're talking about taxes here. So they had everything on the plate.
So wait,
plate
I
want to
just
wanted.
Stop you there. I just want to stop you there for 1 minute, because that sure. My understanding is that those $800 billion in tax in increase in revenues would have essentially been in lieu of letting the Bush tax cuts expire.
Yeah.
So that was a agreement. Net. That was a net reduction of tax increases by almost $3 trillion.
By trillions. If you just simply let the Bush tax cut expire, I think it's $4 trillion savings. This would have been $800 billion. Now the condition was that Congress would have to pass tax reform to the tune of producing $800 billion to $1 trillion in revenues. If they couldn't get that done, then the upper end Bush income tax cuts would expire. So it was one or the other, but basically the onus was on Congress to get tax reform done. If they did it, then the Bush tax cuts were off the table. So, you know, they had all that. And Boehner was, as I understand it, according to talking to people in the White House, he was interested in it, and he thought it was a good deal. He understood that it was sort of a historic type of an arrangement that he could pin his legacy on. And then it just disappeared. And in its place, we have this gambit by Mitch McConnell to essentially give the president authority to suggest cuts, but not have to be bound to them. He can raise the debt ceiling without actually ever passing a cut. And so they just pass the buck, and we're all supposed to just ignore it and then move on to the next political crisis, I guess.
Now, this is really stunning, because this is McConnell basically saying, we can't come to a deal. The only thing we want out of this is to be able to tell our constituents that we voted against the debt ceiling, even though we had basically rigged the process to allow the debt ceiling to rise.
Yeah, and it's sort of a crass political move. And McConnell, you know, he basically admitted that this morning. He did a radio program with Laura Ingraham, and he basically said, I refuse to help Barack Obama get reelected by marching Republicans into a position where we have co-ownership of a bad economy. So this, I mean, you know, he couches that by saying his first priority is to help the economy get on solid footing. His second one is to make sure that Republicans are not in a position where they get hammered in the reelection. And it's sort of a stunning admission in many ways. He did not want Republicans to actually get to a deal that involved, you know, the bare minimum amount of tax increases, because he thought that that would mean that they would have ownership of an economy that was not recovering fast enough. So this is really about politics.
I mean, this whole debt ceiling crisis, as it supposedly is really like kabuki theater inside of kabuki theater. I mean, because... First off,
it's like Inception, yeah.
This thing gets very. We start, you know, if we dig far enough into this, I'm going to see myself at birth or something, because you have a situation here where the whole debt ceiling debate has really been about. I think, and one of the things that people are surmising, and I want to get your response to this as well, is that it is a cover. On one hand, for the Republicans to push an ideological change. On the other hand, it's also a push for Obama to make some type of to follow some type of grand bargain to create some type of legacy so that he can fundamentally restructure things. And then it turns out that the Republicans aren't even interested in that.
Yeah. Well, this is why I actually think the McConnell plan will ultimately, a variation of it will ultimately be what ends up getting passed, because it allows each side to sort of make their own argument in the way that they want and technically be correct. So Republicans get to say, well, listen, we tried, we refused to allow tax cuts, and now look at Obama. He's racking up more debt. He's increasing the debt ceiling by $2 trillion, blah, 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 blah. Obama gets to turn around and says, look, I put out a $4 trillion plan. Republicans wouldn't take it. I refuse to let the nation default, but I'm the serious one on debt and deficit. And then it allows congressional Democrats to say, look, people were trying to push cuts like domestic spending cuts, entitlement program reforms. We protected Medicare. We protected Social Security. We protected these important, vital domestic programs. So you should reelect us. So each side gets to just go home, make the argument they want. They'll all technically be true, but nothing actually gets done.
Now, that last part is sort of fascinating to me because it's almost setting up a dynamic where Jane Congressman goes back to their district and either in their bid to be reelected or their bid to unseat an incumbent Republican say, look, it's clear that we have to protect Medicare and Social Security, not just from the Republicans, but in some way it's setting up a dynamic where they're going to run against Obama in one sort of narrow slice of the pie.
Yeah, I mean, they'll do it without actually mentioning his name,
right,
or risk being sort of called out by the press. But, yeah, I mean, and it has created a really weird dynamic on the Hill these days where you have people like Steve Israel, the DCCC chair. You have Chuck Schumer and Patty Murray, key players in the Senate reelections, and all of whom are deeply concerned about the possibility that Medicare cuts are on the table, all of whom are warning that this is actually going to hurt recruitment of candidates, all of whom are worried that this kills Democratic messaging opportunities based off of the Paul Ryan budget. And then you have the guy in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue who's the one who's responsible for this. And so the party is basically folding on itself. There's really no cohesion. And there's always been friction between congressional Democrats and the White House. But right now I think it's at its apex. You can really sense that people are just not on the same page. They're waiting for some resolution to this matter. But everyone's deeply frightened about what actually gets decided.
Do you have a sense that, I mean, you mentioned that you think that this McConnell proposal is going to be, at least the outlines of it are going to be, is going to be end up being the conclusion. Do you get the sense that the Obama administration, they're publicly saying that we're still pursuing an actual deal as opposed to this McConnell thing? Do you think that they're doing that in earnest, or do you think that they're doing that to maintain one element, I'm not sure which level of the Kabuki theater it is, but one
yeah,
of those...
The veneer of seriousness
yes.
about the deficit, yeah. I mean, it's tough to tell. I know for a fact that there are advisors inside the White House who have access to data which tells them that the public, specifically independents, are deeply concerned about the deficit and the debt. But if you look at any other polling data, it's jobs that sort of reign supreme. So, you know, there could be an element of stagecraft here where the president likes to be seen as the guy who made the biggest, you know, punch in terms of deficit and debt reduction, and the Republicans are the ones who, you know, slid back. And by allowing the McConnell thing to live on while still pushing for that type of arrangement, you still get that veneer of seriousness that you have when you want to tackle the debt. But, you know, I can't imagine that Obama would, you know, first of all, they're insisting that revenues be part of the deal, even if it's the Biden framework, which is about half of what the president wants. And since Republicans are adamant that revenues cannot be part of the deal, it just seems like the writing's on the wall that this will be the end result, that they'll have to just punt.
You know, I've seen that that poll about independence because I was on Kudlow's show last night. And it's so awesome. It's so great. I was with him and Pethakukis and David Webb, who
wow.
I had no idea who he was until we were sitting on the set, and I was just like, it was rather bizarre. But you know, they're talking about, you know, this deficit and debt thing. But at the end of the day, when you look at the polling that talks about what's the most important thing in the presidential election, the debt and deficit comes in like at half as much as there's a whole list of issues. It comes in half as much as just the general other, you know, general
yeah.
other. The clear is 16%. Only 7% of the people say that that's going to be a major issue. Nobody's going to vote on the deficit or debt. It's going to be about jobs at this point, right?
Yeah, and you know, I think the most telling thing for me was, I have no life. So last night I was watching Charlie Rose, and he was interviewing Larry Summers.
Please don't say that. I can't tell you the obsession I've had with Charlie Rose for years.
But I love Charlie Rose. Yeah, I mean, but it really says something about your personal life if you're up at 11 p.m. and watching him. Anyways, I mean, this is an indictment on myself too. So
it repeats on Bloomberg at 3 p.m. Just FYI.
Well, anyway, so Larry Summers is on, and you know, this is not a progressive-minded economist by any stretch of the imagination, but he's on there and they're talking about it, and he's, you know, making the case that now is the time to not make drastic cuts, that we need to make more expenditures in infrastructure and in aid to state and local governments, you know, payroll tax, extend that tax break for people who are employing people, and he threw in his mandatory love free trade agreements and so on and so forth. But, you know, this is someone who's been inside the White House.
Right. Why can't we get a guy like that in the White House?
He was there. And
that's my point. It's what's so enraging about that, about him coming out and saying this now.
I know. Well, it's like a little late there, but you know, to see him say that was sort of, it's startling in one way, but also illuminating, because you know, he clearly is someone who mattered when he was in the administration. He probably is speaking from the vantage point of some of what they privately believe, and you know, gave a little bit of hope to people who think that there needs to be more government intervention and investment in these types of activities, because ultimately, job growth is the way out of. You know, it's not only a way to increase revenues and close the debt, but it's the way to get the economy back on track.
All right, and finally, and I think that's, you know, that's self-evident. I wonder how much he carried that that philosophy 3 years ago or 2.5 years ago when it mattered. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Is that,
yeah.
I wonder if he's not just looking at that in hindsight and now trying to cover his ass.
Well, you get the sense that everyone, I mean, and you got the sense when the president spoke at the press conference a couple days ago in response to the question I asked, that they firmly believe that the stimulus package, for all of its flaws, actually, you know, worked. And, you know, it's very tough to prove a negative. For instance, you can't say, well, you know, we're going to lose 4 million jobs, not 5 million jobs, or whatever it is. And so it's very tough to argue that it worked when, because you don't know exactly how bad the situation was. But you get the sense from everyone there that it actually did have an effect, and that they do believe in the benefits of actual government spending.
They just underestimated the size of the problem at the time.
Yeah, and if you push them on that, they'll say, well, we couldn't get a $1 trillion package through Congress, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. The problem is how much have they moved away from that, and how quickly did they move away from that, and was it too quickly? Because what Larry Summers was talking about last night was, we don't want to repeat what happened in Japan. We don't want to be the U.S. in 1937. He actually said something which is kind of graphic, but he's like, if it weren't for Hitler, FDR would have, you know, been reelected in 1948 with some obscure unemployment level. So he, you know, the benefits of war in terms of that economic recovery, and all of it boiled down to the idea that the government can't take its foot off the gas pedal, or at least can't take it off too quickly. And
all right.
Let me
ask you one final question in terms of the politics of this, because you know, you've got guys like Eric Erickson out there now talking about sending dead ferrets to Mitch McConnell, and you know, the Tea Party guy who was on the Kudlow last night, and Kudlow was befuddled by McConnell as well. Does this whole thing, because, you know, and now there are reports that Bonaire is sitting in the room with the president and not allowed to speak because Eric Cantor is saying, like, you know, you got to ask my permission first. Is this going to blow up into some type of interesting war in the Republican Party? I mean, because nobody's going to buy this. I mean, nobody's going to buy this by McConnell, are they?
I disagree. There is, well, first of all, the Republican, we have to understand, the GOP was never sort of a monolithic entity, and there's always this built-in tension between the Tea Party crowd and the Wall Street crowd. And, you know, what ended up, everyone sort of could see the writing on the wall, and I think this is the week where we're actually really starting to see it, is which side of that weighs more heavily on leadership's mind. And the Wall Street Journal this morning editorialized in favor of the McConnell deal. That says something to me. That says that people who are on Wall Street want to get something done and don't give a shit about,
right,
you know, the Tea Party pledges. And yeah, there's going to be some sort of civil war.
It also says to me, that Rupert Murdoch wants to make sure that the Republicans try and stop any type of investigations into his other problems. Frankly,
well, that we'll see where that ends up, and I'm guessing that, you know, it's a whole other topic, but there's a lot more pressure being applied on that front now. But in terms of the debt ceiling, yes, Eric Cantor is waiting about 2 inches right behind Boehner's back with a knife extended, just waiting for him to back up. And yes, Mitch McConnell is really risking his standing among colleagues, especially with Jim DeMint, over what he's doing right now. But can they cobble together the votes that are needed to get this passed? I mean, Boehner basically needs about 50 Republican votes to get this thing passed, because I'm guessing Nancy Pelosi could whip up a vast majority of her caucus. So I'm not sure this thing dies.
Interesting. Well, I think the most, to be honest with you, I think the most interesting thing is going to be to listen to Rush Limbaugh over the next 2 weeks to see how they twist, how they do this complete 180, because they have been on such a jihad in terms of the electoral base of this party. It's going to be hard to see how they reconcile
this. They've also talked down the actual implications of default to the point where people in the base don't think it's a big deal at all and don't see why you have to blink.
Absolutely not. I mean, that's they were still talking that on Kudlow last night. All three of them were talking, this means nothing. I mean, they've painted themselves into a corner. It's going to be interesting to see. Sam Stein, thanks so much for taking time with us.
Hey, Sam, thanks for having me.
All right, we got to take a break, folks. We'll be back in just a minute.
Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that part. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him, we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
All right, folks, we are back. What was that music?
That was UMass by the Pixies.
Man, that takes me back a long time. That type of thing. I didn't remember. Oh, wait a second. Is that coming from me or from you? Hold on for a second. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Can I help you?
It's Kathy.
Kathy Harris?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, it's great to hear from you.
Why don't you ever pick up your phone?
Well, I just did pick up my phone. I was actually on with another call. I was talking to Sam Stein of the Huffington Post. I don't know if you ever had an attempt to, an opportunity to, if you ever met him.
No, I don't have any truck with that type of media. Sam, I need to get right to it. There's so many exciting things I need to share with you.
Are you okay? You sound
hello?
Like, are you okay?
Am I okay? I'm over the moon.
Oh.
I'm so excited about the projects I've been working with Michelle Mabel and her husband Marcus. She's wonderful.
Oh, wait a second. Marcus. You're referring to Michelle Bachman and Marcus Bachman.
Yes, Marcus and I go way back. She's wonderful. We met years ago at a French horn convention. Marcus and I, we're both big fans of the French horn.
He's a fan of the French horn.
Oh yes, that's where I met her. Anyway, can I just? I don't have a lot of time.
No,
I wanted to share with you the projects that Marcus and I have been working on, especially with the roof raising on August 2nd.
There's a roof raising on August 2nd of what?
The debt ceiling.
Oh, you're going. Oh, you're doing a project with Marcus Bachmann to celebrate.
We're to prevent it. We're putting together the Tea Party protest kits.
Oh.
Yes, that we're handing out for people to be ready for town hall meetings. And I just would like to tell you about the wonderful packages of the Tea Party protest kits. Now, first of all, in the protest kits, the first thing you will see when you open your kit will be a picture of Mitch McConnell, because multiple studies at universities have shown that just looking at his face makes people angry. And in fact, his photo has been used in hospitals to induce vomiting when they run out of Ipecac. Beyond that, the first 100 teabaggers who get a protest kit will also win a wonderful trip to Israel.
Oh, really?
A wonderful trip to Israel. We will be flying the first 100 teabaggers to Ben-Gurion Airport. I'm so excited. Ben-Gurion Airport. We're also having a wonderful picnic at the Mount Herzl Military Cemetery. You can get your photo taken with an IDF soldier. So handsome. You also get a free case of Seagram's from Charles Bronfman.
Oh, wow. Marcus
has arranged. Hang on, Sam. Let me get a word in edgewise. Marcus has arranged for Herman Cain to give coupons from Godfather's Pizza for $3 bills. Isn't that wonderful? Marcus wanted to make sure they were $3 bills.
Why $3 bills?
I don't know. He just left the $3 bill.
Marcus,
I don't know. He always has since I met him at the French Horn Convention.
I see. And so now, are you literally putting these kits together? I mean, are you?
Yes.
Oh, so you're. Do you do it like in a VFW hall, or what do you do? Like you?
Well, we have some of our friends over in Israel putting them together, because as you know, we need to get really cracking on Jesus's entrance strategy. As you know,
oh, of course,
we have to make sure that the Dome of the Rock is free and clear. That we get the Lost Ark of the Covenant. We have to find that, you know, Indiana Jones did the best he could, but then they just put it in that room with all the government things. And wait, as you know,
I want to ask you a
hello?
Question. Catherine Harris, we're speaking to Catherine.
Call me Kathy.
Kathy Harris, former Secretary of State of Florida, former Congresswoman, near a senator. I want to ask you about about Marcus Bachmann, but
he's wonderful. You know, we're going to see Bette Midler. We cannot wait. We're going to see Bette Midler.
Oh, you're going to see Bette Midler.
And when we saw the Cher Christina Aguilera concert, did you see that burlesque? Oh my goodness. We had a time. We had such a wonderful time.
I wanted to talk about, but you're aware that Indiana Jones, that was a movie.
What?
The Indiana Jones, the Lost Ark.
Are you talking about the documentary?
I don't think it was.
Are you talking about that wonderful documentary?
No,
about
Harrison
the
Ford.
Lost Ark.
Harrison
what?
Ford.
Isn't he wonderful? I would have rather seen Yul Brynner, but you know how I feel about Yul Brynner. Oh, and speaking of Benjamin Netanyahu, Bibi is also going to be for the first 100 teabaggers who pick up their protest kits, because as you know, we will not allow a Democrat who's black to raise the debt ceiling. We won't allow it.
No, of course
we won't allow it.
I want to just ask you. I want to go back to Marcus Bachmann. Are you aware of the latest reports that he that his Christian therapy is
reparative therapy?
Reparative
therapy. Yes. So and your point.
Well, you don't. I mean, you have no problem.
You know, God designed our eyes in a very specific way, the rods, the cones, the the convex and concave discs of our eyes to be attracted to the opposite sex. Now, you know, any fool knows this, and Marcus knows this, and as I said, when we met at the French Horn Convention, we discussed these things.
Was he married to Michelle Bachmann at the time?
Michelle, my belle. Yes, he was. They were courting, actually, as they were courting.
Ah, I see. And how did Marcus Bachmann court Michelle Bachmann?
Well, have you heard of trundling? It's a colonial practice, and sometimes the Amish still practice it, where when a young gentleman caller comes to the family home, they will trundle, where on a cold evening they will wrap themselves in swaddling bedclothes and lay astride one another.
I wasn't familiar. So you're saying that Bachmanns trundled each other?
They have trundled. It's very chaste.
But
I want to talk more about our wonderful protest packages we're putting together. Don't forget, with Mitch McConnell's face that
right.
inspires great rage.
Yes, you must
and
be
the
very.
The sound of his voice. Do you know they use the sound of his voice and his face for the running of the bulls in Pamplona?
No, I was not aware.
It gets the bulls all stirred up.
I was.
That's how they get them running.
I was not aware of that at all. So you are, I take it that you're a little bit miffed with Mitch McConnell's...
Oh, my God, don't get me started. We will not allow a Democratic president who's black to raise the debt ceiling or increase any revenue streams whatsoever. I mean, come on, Samuel. Come on. You can only push us so far. You can only push us so far. So anyway, one of the other things you can do, the first 100 people who pick up their protest packages for the tea baggers, you can go, when you go to Israel, you can go to the Dead Sea.
Mm-hmm.
You can ride a camel to the Golan Heights.
Wow, this sounds like quite a...
Masada, you can go to Jamie Masada.
Jamie Masada. No, I don't think it's Jamie Masada. I think Masada
from
is
the Laugh Factory. The first Laugh Factory was... and Masada.
No, I think you're confused.
They have a wonderful comedy club there. Make God laugh.
Make God laugh. Well,
yes.
This has been, Catherine Harris, this has been fascinating. And
and also this special offer for Brandeis University students.
There's a special offer for Brandeis University
students. Brandeis University students to go to Israel and pick up their protest packages. And don't forget Herman Cain will
right.
have...
Coupons.
And be working through Groupon, a wonderful organization, Groupon, online. And so Marcus has arranged for $3 bill coupons.
Yes. I still can't quite figure out why $3 bill coupons. It's
he just likes the $3 bill. And also, he will be showing the documentary of True Blood. Marcus is very upset about True Blood, that documentary. He watches True Blood over and over and over again. He gets so agitated that Eric Northman, that vampire who's the sheriff in Louisiana, who has had his memory erased by a witch's coven. I don't know if you've been watching the documentary, but Marcus is glued to the set every Sunday evening. He's so agitated by True Blood. Those vampires get his blood boiling when they take their tops off.
When they take their top, I see.
And also, we will not allow an energy-efficient light bulb. We will not allow a Democratic president who's black to force us to use energy-efficient light bulbs.
Well, you brought that up. That you understand that legislation was signed by George Bush, who was not a Democrat and white.
I don't care what you say. Indiana Jones did the best he could.
No, I'm not talking about Indiana Jones. I'm saying...
The light bulb, you cannot force government... Get out of my light socket. Get out of my light socket. You cannot force us to... I mean, come on.
Well,
you can
you
only
have,
push us
so far. Do
you have
problems with all electoral codes?
Pardon me?
Do you have problems with all electricity codes? I mean, like, there's certain voltage...
No, just the ones that a Democratic president who's black tries to force down Marcus's throat. He's always say it. Don't force it down my throat. Don't force that down my throat. He says that when he's watching True Blood. Oh, I get so agitated. When he watches that documentary about vampires, True Blood, that Eric Northman really gets, and Bill Compton. He's so agitated watching Bill Compton when his top comes off.
Well, thank you for the insight. Former Senator, near Senator Catherine Harris.
Call me Kathy. So don't forget your protest kits, your $3 bill coupon from Godfather's Pizza. Ride a camel to the Golan Heights.
You haven't been drinking, Kathy, have you?
I've been having some Diet Sunkist mixed with some sugar-free Red Bull. I also love a Mr. Pibb.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in. It was great to hear from you.
Okay, when do you want to talk again?
Anytime. You can call. You know you can call in any time.
Because Joseph the plumber has wanted to talk to you. I didn't know if I could give him your number.
Of course.
Joseph the plumber has been trying to talk to you. He's very angry with you.
I can only imagine.
He heard you were called the King of the Jews by... Was that Dan Aykroyd who called yesterday?
That was...
As Rupert Murdoch?
No,
very
that
funny
was...
Dan Aykroyd.
Yes.
Very funny, doing his Nixon impression circa 1974. Very funny, Dan Aykroyd. Pretending he's Rupert Murdoch calling you the King of the Jews. Samuel the plumber was just fit to be tied.
Joseph the plumber. Catherine...
Marcus, she wanted to tie Joseph the plumber up. I'll tell you what.
It was great talking to you. We're going to have to say goodbye. I'm going to have to pod you down now. She's gone now. All right, folks, that is our show for today, unless you are a member, in which case, stick around. I got a lot of news stories here. Wisconsin, the fake Democrats lost in the primary. We'll get to that. Also, I got the pot stories. I got stories about Anonymous in Syria. And, of course, this News Corp thing, I'll have to catch you up tomorrow. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can call me at 646-257-3920. And, folks, if you can become a member, please. Doesn't seem like my begging you helps, but become a member. All right. See you on the flip side.